Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 239. Amazing. 239 episodes of the CJ Evolution Podcast made possible by you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for tuning in. Patrick here, host and creator of the show. Without you, we would not be where we're at today. In fact, PlayerFM.com has voted that the CJ Evolution Podcast is one of the best criminal justice podcasts for 2018. Again, made possible by you, the supporter. Thank you so much. Special thanks to all those first responders out there. Whatever you're doing in the criminal justice field, men and women, brave souls you are, thank you for what you do. You don't get a lot of accolades. You don't get a lot of praise for what you do most of the time. But here at the podcast, we love you. We support you. Keep doing a fantastic job. You know, I'm a big fan of Four Sigmatic. I always tout the coffee company, and you will love their products. If you head over to the website, you're going to get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. You know, folks, we all get into the criminal justice field, no matter what we're doing, to make a difference, to make an impact, to save lives. My next guest encompasses all of that. He's an amazing guest, has touched so many people during the course of his 17-year career with the California Highway Patrol, and literally has saved hundreds of lives. He has made an impact. And this is what it's about, folks. This is what it's about, getting into the criminal justice field. You're going to love this guest. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am very excited to have my next guest on the show. His name is Kevin Briggs. He's a retired sergeant with the California Highway Patrol. He's a speaker, author, consultant, and veteran. I'm going to let him fill in the rest of his bio. Welcome, Kevin.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for being on the show, sir. I know you're very, very busy, but your story is amazing. First of all, thank you for your service, sir. In law enforcement, you had a very distinguished career with the Highway Patrol out in California. Thank you for being here. I know you're very busy.
Oh, hey, I'm happy to be here.
Well, I gave a little bit of your bio, but I know there's so much more about Kevin Briggs. Can you tell the audience about what, how much of an impact you had and what you were doing when you were a highway patrolman?
Sure. Well, I started with the patrol in 1990, and I went to Hayward, California, which is just south of Oakland, California. So that's where I started at to get my basics and such. And I was stuck there about 4 years because we stopped hiring, so nobody transferred. But you're stuck. You know,
you're stuck.
So about 4 years later, I went to Marin, and Marin connects to San Francisco via that Golden Gate Bridge. And that's where I grew up and live in Marin. So I started working in Marin, and I noticed very few people wanted to work down on the Golden Gate Bridge in that area. I said, hell, I'll take it. I'll go down there. Mm-hmm. So I started working down there, and I had no idea. I mean, no idea the number of suicidal folks and the number of suicides that happened off that bridge.
Mm-hmm. Probably the reason why people didn't want to work there, probably.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That, and it was a beat all to itself. Very seldom did you get a beat partner to help and come down and share the work with you. So you were kind of on your own. Mm-hmm. So I started working down there and, you know, getting these suicide calls. I had no idea. I wasn't trained for this. I had no idea what to say. I didn't know the active listening skills. Mm-hmm. I had empathy, but it was terrible. You know, it was very much, I describe it as a disservice to those folks I was talking to and a disservice to me. Why would you put someone down there who doesn't know, you know, how to handle these types of calls? Mm-hmm. So it was a few years before I actually went through crisis intervention training. And then almost towards the end of my career, when I was very humbled and lucky enough to go through the FBI crisis negotiation school. Mm-hmm. But along the way, I learned a tremendous amount just by doing my own research and talking to some senior folks down at the bridge that work for the Golden Gate Bridge. And just asking the people when I would deal with them, when they would come back over the rail, mm-hmm. what did I do that helped this situation? And what did I do that hurt the situation? You know, and I preach all the time, egos have, you know, if you have a big ego, you will in my opinion, fail as a negotiator. Mm-hmm. And I had tried to keep that ego in check, and I would ask the folks, you know, what could I do to become better? What did I do that hurt this? And who better to ask than the people you're dealing with?
Yeah.
So I learned a lot.
Well, it's very, and you've saved hundreds of people, Kevin.
You
saved such a ton of people. And like you said, what's really, your story is just fascinating. I want to dive more into it. But like you said, one thing that strikes me about what you said is humility. You got to be humble, get your ego out of the way. You're there to help people. And you weren't badge heavy, which for those of you who don't know what that means, it's your ego. And it truly is amazing work. But if I could ask you really quick, sir, what did you always want to be a police officer? Did you always, what made you, what was the, did you always want to do this when you were younger?
You know, I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Like most of us.
So I went into the Army.
Thank you for your service.
And I was in the infantry, and that's when I had my first big scare of my life, is I was diagnosed with cancer in the military. In 1983, testicular cancer, and I was in Germany. So I went all through that. They sent me back to San Francisco Letterman Army Medical Center and had another surgery, a couple of more surgeries there, and chemotherapy. And I had to get a job after that and start getting my life together, recuperating my strength. Mm-hmm. So I applied for a couple of different places, San Francisco PD, and also California Department of Corrections. And Corrections accepted me. So I worked for a few years at San Quentin State Prison. And the guy I was working with became a very good friend of mine. He said, hey, I'm going out for the Highway Patrol, the California Highway Patrol. You know, I was thinking to myself, I wouldn't even have thought that, because those guys always look so sharp and they look pretty smart and all that and everything. I go, yeah, that's way different than what we're doing here. I don't know. And he talked me into it. So I go, all right, I'm going to put forth 100% effort here and we'll see what happens. So went into it. Took me a year and a half before I actually went to the academy. And I made it, and unfortunately he didn't.
Oh,
but
geez. Yeah.
He pointed me in a whole new direction. I am so thankful I did it. It was 1990 when I entered into the academy.
Yeah.
And graduated fourth out of my class, just studied. You know, I hardly took a break because I'm thinking, oh man, I want to go back to corrections. This is it. I could see this. It looks so cool. We did three ride-alongs during my process of going through the academy. So you get a little taste of it. And I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So it was a very cool situation, and very blessed to become part of it.
Well, I think the world is thankful and grateful that you survived your cancer. And, you know, I mean, a higher power led you to the path of what you took to the Highway Patrol. But I gotta ask you, and you know this, Kevin, you've been in law enforcement for many years. You know, this, what you did with helping as many people, which is admirable, is an understatement. It takes a toll on you, right? I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, you've probably seen things and, you know, established that connection with these troubled people who eventually they jump. I mean, you didn't save everybody, I'm assuming.
No, you know, and that's what I tell folks that I try to teach, you know, before I left the Highway Patrol. And there's always new folks who want to come on and they want to learn negotiations and different things. And I would tell them, if you're going to work down here, it's a great place to work down on the bridge. You meet people from all over the world every day. It's really, really cool. But there's this downside. You know, the folks that come here that aren't doing very well and they're contemplating suicide. And you have a very good chance of losing them, not by what you did or said, but that's just the nature of how this is down here. Mm-hmm. So you got to think of that. Yeah. But I also want you to think of, as you're doing this for the next few years or however long you decide to do this, of how many people that you helped. And I don't like to use the word saved personally, because I didn't rush into a burning building or something like that. I talked to these folks. Mm-hmm. So I think I helped them on a very dark day is how I like to look at it.
Yeah. And you mentioned CIT.
Right.
I think it is so important. I remember a couple of years ago, well, maybe it was longer than a couple of years ago, I went through CIT training, crisis intervention training. I think it is invaluable. Every officer out there listening needs to go through CIT. And that's what I'm pushing in my department. we're asking all of our officers to go through this training, and it teaches you. It's such a solid foundation, and you build on that, right, Kevin? You build on those skills that you learn through CIT training.
I think it's a great starter course for folks.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to be mature. Just go into it with an open mind is what I'm asking, because it's what it's going to do is it's going to save you. It's going to save your department. I was speaking up in Bend, Oregon last year, and the chief of police introduced me, and he talked about CIT. And he said, just as you said, he had all of his officers trained in CIT. And what he found was after that, their use of force was cut almost in half.
Exactly.
From the use of that. So that's phenomenal. And I mean, and I got to tell you, as you get older, you know, you don't heal as well if you want to start fighting and all that. But also these uniforms cost so damn much money. So,
well, it was funny. I remember going through CIT training years ago, and I remember there were some SWAT guys in there. And I remember some of them got so ticked off, and maybe you've seen this before in some of your training, that they just left and they said, this is ridiculous. I would have shot that guy by now or tasered him or beanbagged him. And I'm thinking you have to change that mindset, right? And now there's a time and a place to use force. We both know that, Kevin, but you have to use your communication skills first. And it amazed me because they were a day into it, about half the day into it. On the first day, these four or five operators, these SWAT guys got pissed off and they got up and left, never came back.
Wow. See, I would have a big talk with those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And we're seeing more and more now. The SWAT guys are working with the negotiators.
Exactly.
They go as a team. They train as a team. Because, you know, it's not like the olden days. Everything's on video now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not giving it a 100% chance of non-use of force, and like you just said, you know, there is a time and a place. Absolutely. I mean, if you have to go to force, boom, do it. And that's just the way it goes.
But you should exhaust all the other options.
Yes. And that's just the way things are going. And it's actually the right way, too. You know, if we look at it as their family member. Now, can it go from zero use of force to boom, a shootout, you know, really fast? It can. And I'm all up for that when it's appropriate.
I remember teaching. But, go ahead, sir.
But I think we have a responsibility to do what we can for less or non-lethal also.
I agree. I remember, makes me think about when I used to go into the academies years ago and kind of give lectures and talks about use of force and Fourth Amendment stuff and all kinds of other stuff. And I used to ask the cadets in there, I said, you know, can anybody tell me what is the most important tool that you have? And of course, you know, 80%, 85%, well, my gun. And I would say, no. No,
yeah.
It's your mouth. It's your mind. That's your most important tool. I would rather de-escalate a situation than ever have to use any kind of force.
Right.
And most cops, like you know, Kevin, go through their career without ever using a firearm. So
yes,
you know, I mean,
if you ask the guys who have been in some serious shootouts, you know, they would have wished that they didn't, for the most part.
Now, one of the things that people out there, or some people don't out there, and I know you know this, Kevin, don't realize about suicide, that it just affects so many people out there. I mean, there's a ripple effect. It's like throwing a pebble into a pond. So many other people other than the person that wants to end his or her life are affected.
Yes, absolutely. Right? And you know, I use a different term, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you would think this also. I know it's just this saying, this ripple effect, but I tell folks, you know what? It's a tsunami.
Oh,
it's
I agree. Yeah, that's a great.
Because it just rolls people over. If you've ever been affected by a suicide of an immediate family member, you're numb. You're in denial, then you're angry, and you go through these big five stages of grief, and it's horrible. And it leaves in its wake, as they say, so many unanswered questions. And you say to yourself, God, what could I have done? I knew I saw that. I didn't say anything. I thought somebody would have. There's so many things that go through your mind. What could I have done? And then people live with the sadness and the guilt and blame. It's tough.
Now, how can you talk about so many, you know, important topics. You talk about CIT skills, you know, first responders and how they can cope with trauma. I mean, let's talk about that for just a few minutes, Kevin. I mean, how can, because you know, first responders see all kind. You have a lot of first responders out there. They see trauma every day. How can they cope with, you know, dealing with trauma, dealing with burnout? How can they cope with that? What are some tips and suggestions?
And let's just chat about compassion fatigue and vicarious trauma and what they see, this compassion fatigue. We go in there, we want to do a good job. But because of the things that we see, it's kind of the nature of this business, unfortunately. And let me read to you what it says here for compassion fatigue. The cumulative physical, emotional, and psychological effects of exposure to traumatic events or stories when in a helping or serving capacity. And that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Exposure to traumatic events. And I'm talking dispatchers, even including this, they're there too. And we tend to forget about those folks. But it affects every part of you, from cognitive, behavioral, emotional, somatic, spiritual. Every piece of you can be affected by this. Mm-hmm. So what I would teach mainly the officers in Marin, what we see is more suicides than deaths by car accidents or different things. But what I would explain to them, this is the process of what happens after that. This is how you might be feeling. And this is what we can do. We have the Employee Assistance Program, EAP, and we can use 7 times per fiscal year to go and talk to them about that. And I recommend it.
Yeah.
It's a different date now than years ago, of course.
I was going to say, you didn't talk about this stuff in years past.
Yeah.
It was all hokey pokey. You know that, Kevin. There's no way that – well, I shouldn't say no way. Some people, some officers might have, but not to the point where they're at now where they're opening up more. I think.
Right. You didn't back then. You went to a bar, you went home. That's just the way it went. Yeah. You came back the next day and did your job.
Yeah, back to duty.
End of story.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's just.
Eventually they went off on stress. And I think it used to be anyway, peace officers, police officers would live maybe 5 years after retirement, and that was it.
Yeah, it's just. And I hope that's changing. I think it has.
I think it has.
You know, and one of the things that I really love about what you talk about. And I've been talking about it a lot on my show, is mindfulness.
Yes.
I mean, I think it is so important. I meditate, and I'm not saying that's the end-all, be-all, and that's the cure for everything. But I started meditating a couple of years ago. And I can tell you, Kevin, it has done so many amazing things for me. I mean, just entering and even just being mindful of how I'm feeling, how I'm reacting, how I'm talking to people. It has done wonders for me. And I know you talk about that. Can you expand on that, its importance?
You know, and once again, I went in with an open mind, not this type A conservative cop that I typically am, but just to go in with an open mind. And I started doing some research, and I'm sure you did it too, but I researched TM, Transcendental Meditation.
Exactly, yeah.
I tried yoga. It wasn't quite for me. So you gotta find what fits for you. So I took this class. And here's the weird thing is, you know, that as cops, we don't like to close our eyes by other people. It doesn't happen. It's like sitting by the front door in front of the door of where you eat. It doesn't happen.
Exactly.
Well, I can tell you some of the best meditations I've had were doing this in a class of maybe 8 to 10 other people who I don't have a clue who the hell they are. I mean, I have a clue who they are, but we do this meditation and you wake up and I'm not going to say you wake up, you go through it. And it's about 25 minutes or so. And when you come out of it, you're just happier. It does something to the brain. And I've done a little bit of research about it, but I can't explain the whole thing about it. I would tell folks, just give it whatever it is. Mindfulness is really cool. And what it will help you do is so many things. You're going to sleep better. You're going to feel better. You're going to learn to live in the moment, which how many times have you put your sunglasses on top of your forehead, on top of your head, and you can't find them. And you're looking for them for half an hour. So you realize they're on your forehead. That's what I tell folks. I go, man, it's like, oh, and then you're so mad.
Well, and there's a reason why, and you know this, Kevin, maybe the listener doesn't, maybe some of them do, but there's a reason why the U.S. military, there's a reason why professional sports teams, educators, all walks are, most of them are engaging in some type of mindfulness.
It really is cool. It slows you down. And if you're like me, you're racing at, 100 miles an hour. Even when you're doing nothing, it's just kind of the way it is. I have a very difficult time sleeping. But with this mindfulness, you have to do it. It's like anything else. Yeah. If you're going to do it, they recommend for what I do twice a day, morning and afternoon. But you can do it anywhere. And if you're busy with your mind, it's just a busy mind. If there's all sorts of sounds around going on, it's just a busy mind is all. Yeah. No big deal.
Yeah.
But it really can do wonders for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you talk about, you got a great book out there. I haven't read it yet. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to get it. You have a best-selling book out there called Guardian of the Golden Gate. Can you talk about that?
Right. Protecting the Line Between Hope and Despair is the other part of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was asked to write a book by a couple of different publishers, and I went with one. So I started doing this, and my big deal was, you know, I want this to be very truthful and honest because I'm going to throw my life's work into this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody's going to buy it, but here's what's going to happen. So we kind of did a chalkboard of the whole thing. And first I was wondering, who would want this? Come on. But, you know, I wanted it to be helpful, so I included some programs that I developed. But it's about me, and, you know, it has the cancer and then these environmental factors of how a mental illness can develop, because my mother died when she was just 49 years old. All these different things that happened to me, but they happen to so many people also. And I wanted to show them how can we be better day by day, and also how do we talk to someone who may be suffering? Mm-hmm. Where do we go? How do we talk to them? What do we say? What do we not say? Where do we even have a conversation at? So I went in depth in that and how to have that conversation. And we know not everybody's suicidal, but let's find out. And what happens if they say yes? You know, you freak out. Oh my God, how could you do this to your family?
Yeah.
No, let's take a breath. Let's talk about this. And just being there for folks and letting them know you don't have to go through this alone is huge.
Yeah. And we'll have that. We'll have your book linked up in the show notes, but I think what you said, again, resonates with me. I think it has to do, a large portion, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, is as police officers, and you've seen it in your career, I've seen it in my career, is we're so fast. We have to, okay, wrap this up, wrap this, whatever you're dealing with, up quickly because we got to get to the next call. We need to slow down a little bit. And when people who are suffering and are in the place that you've seen hundreds and thousands of times, we need to slow it down a little bit. We need to show a little empathy, like you have done, and we need to pay attention. We need to slow it down. We can't be rushed all the time. Does that make sense?
Patrick, you hit the nail on the head there. That's the thing with this is even though management may say, come on, hurry this thing up, whatever, you know, we have to slow it down.
Yeah.
I learned even my approach has slowed down. I will stay a good 15 feet away or so from folks and open-handed and just walk up and go, hi, I'm Kevin. Is it okay if I come up and talk with you for a while?
Yeah.
Not just going up and controlling a scene like we typically are trained to do. Sergeant Kevin Briggs with the California Highway Patrol. No, slow it down.
Slow it down.
Hi, I'm Kevin. Is it okay if I come up and talk with you for a while?
Yeah.
And empower the folks. You know, validate them. That's really big is normalizing their situation, validating them just by saying, you know what? That sounds really tough.
Well,
it's amazing what you can get by your verbiage.
Yeah, verbiage and slowing it down. And again, just now there are those times, Kevin, you know, where you have to speed it up. But in my career, and I'm sure you've seen this in your career, 99% of the time you have time on your side.
Yes.
We don't have to make. Now, there are those. And again, it probably depends on where you're at. But in my experience, I can't speak for you or anybody else, obviously. But in my experience, we have time on our side. We can take as much time. If we have to sit there and talk to somebody who's about to commit suicide for 2 or 3 hours, then that's what needs to happen.
Correct. I agree 100% with you. Yes.
Yeah. So.
And I think you're right. And we tend to rush things and push it some, where if we let them do it on these situations, and of course, you know, they can dictate different things, but by allowing them the chance to slow down, to tell us what's going on, mm-hmm. You know, a positive outcome is much more likely to occur.
Yeah. And Kevin, you've been out there, you've been done TEDx talks, your TED talks, you've been featured in Men's Health, USA Today. Just amazing what you're doing out there, sir. If people want to reach out to you, how can they find you?
They can find me at my website, which is www.pivotal-points.com, or email me at Kevin Briggs at pivotal-points.com.
Any final tips or advice you want to leave the listener?
You know, the biggest thing I tell folks, and it goes to anybody, whether you're talking to your spouse, your children, listen to understand. Hmm. And that means a whole lot.
Yeah. Well, Kevin Briggs, thank you so much, sir, for what you have done in your very distinguished law enforcement career. Thank you for what you continue to do, speaking, consulting. We wish you nothing but success in your endeavors. If you ever need anything with the podcast, you have my contact information. Please let me know. Be happy
Patrick,
to help.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Of course, sir.
It's been wonderful.
You're always welcome back. If you ever, I don't know if you have another book in progress. I think you got.
We're working. I'm working with a few mental health professionals, yeah. And we're coming up with a quality of life book for folks.
I love it. I love it.
We're working on that.
It's so important, you know, that officers start. That's one thing that we didn't talk about, but maybe we can talk about it in the next show about officers and how they need to take better care of themselves.
Wait till this book comes out, and I'll send it to you first as worksheet, and then we'll have a good conversation about it.
All righty, Kevin. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.